One of the really interesting things about EARWAG or as a women in gender studies program is that it starts late. So it doesn't start until 1986. By this point, you've already had the sort of high water mark of second wave feminism. You know, it happens because Columbia goes coeducational, and you have on campus people like Martha Howell, and people have been here a very long time, sort of in the feminist trenches without any kind of institutional space, but on their own doing feminist pedagogy, on their own doing feminist mentoring on campus and these sorts of things. So Columbia comes to the institutionalization of women and gender studies late. I mean, you know, at least 10 years later than many of, you know, other programs. I think the first program, because I was at San Diego State last year at some point, starts, the first women in gender studies program starts, or women's, it would have been feminist studies or women's studies actually, in like 1972. San Diego State lays claim to being the first one. So, you know, Columbia is a decade, more than a decade later. And that means that this program looks differently. So, I mean, I think one of the things that might have been difficult for students is all of our work at first glance doesn't look like feminist and gender studies work, right? You know, so I work on genealogy and what's called kenkeeping and root seeking. And for me, that's very much about, you know, thinking about norms around the family. I mean, all of this stuff around genetic genealogy assumes a heteronormative, normative family. So to me, that's sort of embedded, that critique and that engagement with that conversation is part and parcel of what I'm always doing. I think a lot of us, Saidiya Hartman's last book was on sort of root seeking in Ghana and, things that Jean Howard works on Shakespeare and Roz Morris has been running a series on sort of Africa and South Africa. And so I think to a student, so for us, you know, I think for the faculty, we are feminists and everything that we do, our intellectual work is always imbued with that, you know. And I think that's a kind of, you know, I guess an example I use all the time is that when I was in graduate school looking at dissertations from the 80s and early 90s, there would be, you know, dissertations on, you know, labor citizenship, name a topic, and there would be a gender chapter. So, you know, I remember talking to people about older graduate students or people who are assistant professors, and that was the strategy. You do a gender chapter, right? But I come of age as a graduate student, as an undergraduate, where I don't know how to think without always having a gendered perspective and a feminist perspective. So everything, like that antenna is always up and active. It's not sort of isolated to a chapter. And so, you know, this book on the Black Panther Party's health activism, there's not a gender chapter, but there's gender all the way through, you know, throughout the book, and I think a matter of fact way. So, you know, I think sort of it's less about the objects. Like you mentioned, some people work near history, far history, text, not text. You know, Mariana has worked on the family, but she's also been working on memory. So I think if students don't understand that history and they're looking for a women and gender studies program that always, you know, everybody's work, every talk title, everything is like, you know, gender in this, women in that, sex in this, you know, we're just a little bit different. And part of that is because we come late, we're institutionalized. Women in gender studies is institutionalized late at Columbia. So Columbia is able to chart a different path.